Hello, everybody, and welcome. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Addiction Boss, where we talk to your favorite entrepreneurs about how they manage their addictive tendencies and turn them into assets for themselves in business and life. Today, we have James Ewing as a guest. This is our first episode. My name is Brian Keith Noonan, and Addiction Boss is a concept that I came up with through my own experience and struggles with addictions and also using them to my advantage in business and life. James, how are you?
Yes, sir. Good, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
Great. Thank you so much for stepping up as our first guest. And why don't you just let everybody know what you do real quick and anything about you that who you are or what we should understand as a precursor to our talk here today, please.
Sure. So something like a bio, maybe?
I'm business you're in, so forth.
All right, you got it. I'll start out with that, but I've got a question for you. Am I allowed to curse on this
sure.
show? Oh, fuck
yes.
Because I cursed a little bit.
Yeah, it's our setting on this channel is rated R, so go at it.
Hell yeah. All right. So who am I? It's a deeper question to ask, what have I done in the past? And then I'll explain what I believe is in my future. So what I've done in the past is I've started and sold several businesses, two of them actually for money. One of them I started when I was 24 years old. It was a computer consulting company called ETCI. I built that up and was married at the time and basically went through a divorce at around age 30 and decided to shift that business from a lifestyle business to a growth business with an exit strategy. And so I built out the industry's first multi-tenant disaster recovery hosting environment and at a data center. And it was very exciting and expensive. I then sold that company, full stock purchase, to a group that screwed me on the entire purchase. They actually defaulted on all of the loans, and about $500,000 of which I had personally guaranteed. So in 2008, I had a tough decision. I had to either quit the job that I had acquired along with the sale of the company and then sue them, or stay with them, suck it up, file for bankruptcy, and start over. And I think that for
that
me,
happens.
That's when, that's really, as far as it pertains to our topic today, that's really when my escapism started. Although it's been around my whole life, during that time of the divorce combined with the sale of the business and then the fail of them to pay the debt that I had accumulated was really, really tough on me. And so I went ahead and decided option A. I quit the job. I started a new company called Virtual Empowerment, and I worked my butt off at the same time paying attorneys out the butt to fight and sue these guys. And it took about 2 years, and I finally settled out of court and sold my company at the same time, thankfully, to a guy named Ramir Bosu at CompuShare. And he picked up the last end of the tab of my attorney's fees so that I could continue to fight. And that's basically what I ended up getting for the company. But I got a great job out of it. So
nice.
That's kind
of CompuShare is pretty big, right?
They were
that's
pretty
a,
big
that's
about,
the name I recognize.
Yeah, $28 million whenever I sold to them. And then they sold to D&H, which is who I now work for, 2 years ago. And so I actually did get a piece of stock, and I got a little bit of a settlement out of that. So that was kind of cool. And
nice.
And now I work for a top 100, fintech top 100 firm that is multi-billion dollar and publicly traded. And I've got a great gig because I created the technology that I sell. So I work from home doing demos and architecture for these banks and credit unions, and it's kick ass, and they pay me great. So I've got a good line. Yeah, I've got a good line as far as where I've ended up. But the process to get here was tough, and I had a lot of emotional struggles, a lot of financial struggles, as you can imagine. And I used escapes as the method for dealing with all the challenges that were going through my head. And there was a lot of times I felt like a failure. You know, here I was, an entrepreneur, and on the outside, if you looked in, you'd see a guy who was healthy, fit. He had a different girl coming through his life every month or two, and they were hot and younger than me, and he had a boat, and he had, you know, some badass wakeboarder. I used to compete. So I had all of this shit going right from the external. Like, if you were to look from the outside in, you'd think, this guy's a badass. I wish I was like him, you know? But in reality,
How often is that the case, huh?
Not often, that is the case. From what I see, the most driven individuals are sometimes the ones that torture themselves. And so that's where I ended up coming to a realization after finally the second time that so I sold my company to CompuShare, and then 4 years later they sold to DNH. And the burden of driving technology in the data center space was lifted off of me. Because now, all of a sudden, this technology belonged to a company that had tremendous techie resources, and I didn't have to be the lead tech guy. And it was great, right?
Nice.
It was also very confusing 2 years ago to all of a sudden no longer have admin accounts of the VMware farm and the SAN and the web top, you know. And it was just weird. But it provided me with a really unusual thing, and that was time. Almost like a vacation from working 80 hours a week, every night, every weekend, always being on call, to working 30 hours a week, 40 hours a week from home with no drive time, no travel, or very little travel. All of a sudden, I didn't have anything to do. And I think that's when I found my calling. I feel like my calling has always been inside of me. So this now is we're getting into who am I, right? I feel like my calling has always been inside of me lurking. And I think one of the biggest reasons that I felt tortured was because I was not executing on my calling. Right?
Oh, I love it. I love it. And I think that a lot of people are feeling that same thing. You know,
they feel like
following their calling is going to, you know, may not make them the money that they need, or may be controversial, or whatever the case is. So I love that you did that, and absolutely, I think that will resonate with a lot of people listening. James, what's been your particular challenge with addiction? Has it been like drugs or alcohol or something else?
No, it's been porn. So my addiction started when I was about probably 12 years old, I think. I was walking home from school with a buddy of mine that lived up the road, lived way out in the desert. And we took this little shortcut through the desert. We're going to see if we could build a fort. And we find this bag, this paper bag, full of French porn magazines. And I'd never seen anything like it before except for the lingerie section of the Sears catalog, you know? And maybe the naked girls in the National Geographic mag. That was it, you know? And so all of a sudden, there's all this porn, and I got addicted to it. I'd been escaping this feeling, this fear of rejection, since I was about 4 or 5 years old. And I was really I was terrified of being rejected and not loved. And there's a lot of backstory there. But there's the pain was already present. And in my young life, to be exposed to this pornography and then be able to jerk off to these hot women that I'd never even imagined looked like this, it was instantly addicting to me. And so
I think it's a big thing for a lot of guys, James, and I think it's one of the probably the biggest and least spoken of addictions that's going on right now. So thank you for bringing
that
up.
There's so much shame wrapped around it, okay? And for me, it was a very religious thing. If you masturbate, it's a sin, according to how I was raised, all right? If you imagine having sex with a woman that you see in a magazine or on the street or whatever, it's in God's eyes the same way as if you had had sex with her, fornication, which was the ultimate sin as far as I was raised. So all of a sudden there was this condemnation, judgment, and horrific shame wrapped around pornography and masturbation. So that was really my thing, and it became a drug of choice, for lack of a better term, as far as my escapism. And I see it now with clarity that all of those things tied in to create this sort of self-eating watermelon, right? So I had this horrific feeling of guilt and judgment and failure because I liked porn, right? And yet I was terrified of being a failure or being viewed as a failure because I was terrified of being rejected and not being loved. And so when I would feel like I wasn't loved, then I would seek out porn, which would make me feel like I'm not worthy of being loved.
Yeah.
What a fucked up
cycle.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that probably goes for every addiction, really. That's something that's in common with that. And then we hide it and we lie about it and we feel bad about it. And it just,
that's right.
Yeah, absolutely feeds on itself.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So have you come to the conclusion that you need to completely abstain at this point or keep things as they are, but just be aware of it, or something in between?
I've been on a journey for quite some time to figure out all of my isms. So I don't really believe in the escape being the problem. It could be porn, it could be drugs, alcohol, whatever it is for you or anybody else. What I personally believe is that abstinence is not a cure. I believe you must find out what the ism is in the escapism and address that. You must heal the ism. I don't think that it's the same for everyone. I do believe that some people are quite literally physiologically and emotionally and spiritually addicted to the point at which they need help beyond what just mental and spiritual clarity can give them. For me,
sure.
I firmly believe that the idea of abstinence is not required. And I tested it on myself. And so...
Right. So if I'm hearing you correctly, what you're saying is the addiction is just a symptom of something else. And if you can address the something else, then everything else should fall in line with moderation of the addictive behavior. Is that correct?
Perfectly said. Perfectly said. Yes. That's exactly right.
Yeah, that's a bit controversial in the recovery community, and I don't mind being controversial. I kind of agree with you.
Cool.
But the main thing is, I think, for people to find their own path, and for some it might be abstinence, but if that's not working for you, consider this as an option. Because looking at the addiction itself, the addictive behavior, whether it's drugs, alcohol, porn, or gambling, or what have you, that's a symptom to me, to my mind. And eliminating that symptom is kind of putting a Band-Aid on a wound that's deeper and needs to be addressed. So I like where you're going with this.
I absolutely love the way you worded that, and I agree with you 100%. And I think it's actually really, really difficult to have the balls to look yourself in the mirror and go, I'm ready to deal with the underlying source. Because in reality, Brian, this is going to sound weird. For anybody that's been addicted, I know the pain that goes beyond it. I know the pain of missing an appointment because I was hungover. The pain of whatever, I mean, you name it. There's all kinds of bad ramifications that come from addictive behavior, all right? Broken marriages, broken families, broken finances, ending up in jail for some people. It could be horrible. But I'm telling you, man, those symptoms, you know, a lot of cases for some people are actually easier to deal with than diving down deep inside and finding the source of your pain. And so it takes a ton of courage to actually be willing to dive down and address that. What's interesting is when you get down in there, it's not near as scary. But the thought of it is terrifying.
Yeah, and that's why the cycle gets repeated and repeated, and people go to rehabs, or people go to AA, NA, what have you, or people do this and that, and they keep relapsing and recreating their experience because they never got to the root of the problem. So how have your addictive, or what some people consider like OCD kind of tendencies, in quotes, help you out in your business? Is there any positive side to this? Because this broadcast has two purposes. Number one is to bring the dialogue out into the open so we can remove some of the stigma of addiction and bring the conversation out into the open so people don't have to feel as much shame and guilt and can seek help or express themselves and find their way more easily. The second part of it is, how do we turn some of these things that we go through into a positive? How do we turn it around? Because I believe that people who tend toward addictive behaviors also have a lot of positive qualities. Even some of those addictive tendencies could be positive qualities if channeled in the right way. Does that resonate with you at all? And can you cite any examples of that for you?
Yes. And now I see why you didn't want to send me the questions in advance. That's a good question. You got me. You know, I had not thought through this until you started speaking the question, but it is absolutely clear. Now, I'm on the middle of age 43 years old, all right? So now I can look back with clarity. But damn it, I wish I could have told my younger self what was going on. I mean, it's huge. Your personality, James, if I were talking to my 20-year-old self, I would sit myself down and say, stop for one fucking minute, all right? Hold this, and it's a mirror. And I want you to stare at yourself and breathe and listen to what I have to say. And I would say this. I'm going off the cuff here. But I would say something along the lines of, the drive, the nervousness you have, which keeps you from being comfortable right now, sitting and staring in that mirror, is going to create unbelievable success for you. But along the way, you're going to think that the only way you can have that drive and that success is because of the fear of sitting still and staring in that mirror. I'm telling you, you can have both. You don't need the anxiety, the fear, and the drive to come from pain. That anxiety can be eradicated, and you'll still have the drive. The fear can be eradicated, and you'll still have the drive. And the pain can be absolved, and you'll still have the drive. So that's what I'd say at 20, because I did not drink at age 20. And I didn't smoke. I puffed on cigarettes once in a while, but I wasn't addicted at all. All right. Now I don't know.
Interesting.
If that was
so some of those things came into your life a little bit later than some.
Yeah, a lot of people. I mean, and that's, you know, I really have a heart for people that started smoking, for example, or doing drugs during puberty, because I personally believe that your brain chemistry automatically gives you the ability to deal with stress. And during puberty, your brain is, you know, the plasticity in your brain is always there, but it's super, super plastic. You're able to really absorb new neural pathways and figure out ways to deal with stress. And if you've got a cigarette in your hand or a drink in your hand, and you're dealing with stress using these external things, then the brain doesn't learn how to stretch and absorb that pain and deal with it without that chemical. And so quitting later in life, if you smoked or drank or whatever you were addicted to during puberty, is much worse. Now for me,
sure,
you know what my escape was though, during puberty, guess how bad that got? With pornography. Like, it was major. And so I still had the same deal. Yeah, I still had the same deal. In a way, though, my escapism is a little less impactful as long as I'm working a regular job. Because guess what? You're not going to sit at your desk on a regular job and look at porn. You have no choice, right? Whereas if I had a bottle under the desk, I could go to the bathroom and take a shit, or I could take a smoke break and go smoke, right? So I automatically had, based on my particular poison, I automatically had a little bit of a buffer that forced me to keep that at bay. But sure. Some people don't have that buffer. So for me, I think that kind of helped along the way. But I certainly kept with that addiction and escapism throughout my life and throughout my marriage. I mean, it's a horribly twisted thing to have your favorite escape be porn and women, right, and sex, and be married to a wife that doesn't like sex or porn and is extremely judgmental about it. And that was twisted, right? So, hey, be that as it may, that's what ended up happening for me. I married a woman who was a very devout Southern Baptist, and that's the behavior she expected. It bothered her if there was a six-pack of beer in the fridge over the course of a week. And bothered her tremendously if I ever mentioned porn. So I never got caught, right? But then she didn't like sex, so wow. I was pissed off at God because how could you make me with this high sex drive? And then I did everything right. I married the first girl I ever had sex with. I'm married. I'm leading the singing in your church. And you put me with a girl who doesn't like sex? That's the cruelest God I've ever imagined, you know? I stayed pissed off at that for a long time.
James, there is so much gold in this conversation, and unfortunately we had to schedule only a half hour today. I would love to get into some of this stuff more with you, because there's things for people to learn and understand here that I would love to put out. So if you would consider it, I'd love to schedule another at least another 30 minutes with you on
it'd be my pleasure.
Episode like 1.2. As we move toward wrapping up here, one last question. Are you successful, and how do you define success? A short answer.
I am successful. I define success as progress, not perfection. And my version of success is, am I having an impact? In other words, I believe I found my mission, and I believe my mission is to be on this earth impacting men in a positive way, and women as well. And I think that in the past, I used to define success from a more worldly perspective, money, and hot chicks, and shit like that. Now that I've found my mission is to actually help people and have an impact, and I'm doing things like this show with you, for example, abso-fucking-lutely, I am a success. Am I complete success? No, not yet. I got a long ways to go, but I'm happy that I'm here. So, yes, good question.
Right on. That's great. And what I heard you say, by the way, about in terms of like how the addictive tendency or the feelings of behind that can be turned into an asset. I love the way you put it, but basically like the way that we're hungry and we go after things and we're tenacious is an advantage, but we don't have to necessarily do it with the anxiety or the fear that we tend to. And that was really powerful in terms of how it helps your business. James, where can people look you up and get in touch with you if they want to learn a little bit more about what you're doing?
Oh, sorry, I was on mute. I've got a website, jamesewing.us, okay. And that's E-W-I-N-G. I also have a Facebook group that I'm very selective about called Screw the Facade. If you're interested in getting in there, I'm going to look you up before you join, but you're welcome to find me there.
Great, perfect. I'll put those in the show notes if there are some on here, which I think there are, but that's James, J-A-M-E-S, Ewing, E-W-I-N-G, .us for his website, and his Facebook group is called Screw the Facade. Love that. Love that. And we're coming down to the end of our time for today. This is our first episode. It's a bit experimental. I hope you enjoyed it. And you can look me up on Facebook, Brian Keith Noonan. I've got a website that's not done yet, addictionboss.com, and a Facebook group or a Facebook page for the same, which is facebook.com/addictionboss. And the goal of this is to bring out the truths and wisdom and insight about addiction that you need to turn yours around and optimize your life, as well as being the boss of your own addiction and turning your vices into assets. So we're coming down to a close, James. Thank you so much. And I'm going to end this up for now. I think this is a great first episode, and I appreciate you, brother.
I appreciate you, brother. Have a wonderful day.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.